Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument, and has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. It's great to have you here tonight, and it's really great. I have a great bunch of people here tonight, a lot of my friends and great musicians here. My guest is the incomparable Prescott.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous, yeah. And obsequious.
Yeah, that too.
There you go.
And actually on time.
On time, yes. He was actually early.
As bass players should be.
Yes. So he is here, and our show is going to be talking to him about some of the gigs that he's doing and his role as a session man and sideman with the various bands that he's been playing with.
And the man. Every now and then.
There you go.
God.
And he's brought some amazing basses. I'm really excited. Also with me is Doug Moore, another bass player. He's going to be handing the basses to Prescott and tuning them as they're needed.
Bass handler.
Hold on. Let me get your mic on there. Bass handler. Doug?
Yes.
There you go.
Thanks.
He's shy.
Some may have some pawn tickets on.
Yes.
But ignore that. Okay. I had a quick run on the way over.
And then also, too, who came by earlier before the show, and she's gonna be building a pedal board for me, and we just designed it and put it together. Another great guitar player, Kathy Lauer from Sistered Skinnerd, which will be on the show in July, and she's building this pedal board for me, and that will be a show in itself. It's for my acoustic guitar. Kathy, move that mic towards you and say hi.
Hi, everybody. I'm just horning in on the whole thing.
Yes. And then also, behind the scenes, you probably can't see them on camera, but they're very good friends of mine. I've known them for many years. Is Audrey and Mia have come down to see the show. Mia's a little guitar player. She has a little Squire Strat that's pretty awesome. And Audrey, I've known for years. We worked together at Panasonic. It's good to have you guys here. You don't have a mic on you, but welcome anyway. But they're listening. And then also in the waiting room in the back, another guitar player, Dave Macias, is back there. So I just want to shout out to him. We have no room in here for him. We had a literally, we're
crowded. It's my fault.
It's your fault, all those basses, but it's okay. It's okay. Anyway, now let's go ahead and start. What I want to talk about is, because Prescott, he had come on the other day. We had a show that we were doing on punk, on Detroit punk. And Prescott came in to sit in with a bunch of different players. And what everybody noticed was when, you know, they were all playing together and they were singing a song together. And Prescott came in, and when he started laying the bass track, it just all solidified. And it was amazing. You could tell. I mean, the bass made the difference. And again, a good sign of a great bass player that pulls the band together. And I think that's critical. And his reputation as a session and bassist and side bassist is well known. And Doug had gone to see Missing Persons play, who Prescott plays with. And he said it's just, you know, from listening to the albums and stuff, it's a much more powerful feel. And a lot of that is what Prescott brings to the table. So I thought it would be an interesting show to talk about gigs like Missing Persons, where they have an established sound, the hits are there. What do you, you know, you go into the gig, what does that mean? What, you know, how much freedom do you have? How much can you make it your own? It's obvious in Missing Persons, from what I've heard from Doug, but other people have seen the band play, it is different. And obviously you've changed a little bit. It's changed a little bit from you being.
I also dance too, so that makes it a little different.
That's good. So
I really do.
But anyway, what I want to talk about is a little bit, let's talk about the gig. So walking in there with an established band, with an established sound, how did you, you know, go through the process a little bit of how you found your groove or your niche in there? Because obviously you got to do what the hits demand, but at the same time you want to make it your own.
The thing with the recordings of Missing Persons, a lot of them really had more of a synth pad playing the bass. Mm-hmm. Later on for live, they, I think, had Chuck Wild play some of the bass lines. So, and a lot of them are just the, you know, pretty much the eighth note patterns. And I felt if you're going to compete and do live shows, you got to do, try to be creative at the same time, keep the basic structure. So I would add fill-in lines. Sometimes I'd pop where there were no pops. Mm-hmm. So, and I would try to make it, in a way, more contemporary by making it a little more rock and roll. Because otherwise, some of the shows we've done with Berlin and Human League on these 80s tours we've done, I mean, not only are they losing loops, if they are, but everything is so stiff. And I just felt if you can get more interplay and more soul into it, I think the songs would work well, and they have.
So Missing Persons is using a real rhythm section.
There's no loops, which is refreshing, I think, with some of the 80s groups. Because there's no give and take. I like some rushing. I like pulling back. I like the dynamics of live music. And when you have a school teacher being the click track, sometimes it's really offensive because you can't take liberties. And basically, you don't have a lot of freedom unless you're comfortable.
Well, what did they tell you when you joined the band? What did they say, you know, you could do? Or, you know, obviously they gave you the music. And
well, the thing was, I've known Dale for a long time. I mean, we both met each other pre-successes, so to speak. So we were friends. So when and we've done shows where they played in the same bill as us. So it was basically, please come play with me. You know, Doug passed away in 2010, and the Knack is on hiatus until something works, you know, figure out how to do it. So Dale was just happy to have me play with her. She knows who I am, and she basically didn't say anything. Just says, do what you do. And she loves what I play. So it hasn't been that microscope of analytical, you know, discrepancies from the original, so to speak.
Yeah, now we've had Prescott on before, and some of the stuff that we played on there, the versatility and the adaptability, you can play a lot of different styles, much more than people know you for from just the Knack alone.
Yeah, so, except for luckily that third album, which you're going to play a track from, Round Trip, at least it showed more diversity as a rhythm section with Bruce and playing style as well, which was great to have it out there. But otherwise, I don't think a lot of people know because they only hum da-da-da-da-da, you know, which is a compliment. At the same time, it's kind of limiting.
Well, let me start out since we're talking about Missing Persons. I got a couple of clips here of Missing Persons that I want to take. I'm just going to play. I didn't pull clips from it. I'm just going to play the song from the beginning. The first one is Words.
Should I play along with it? What should I do?
Well, I want you to listen to it and then tell me what you do. Okay. And what changed and how it evolved from
there. Second, like, do it as it's playing too and show you. All right, well, however you
No, no, to listen it. To it and okay. Then you can show us because I want to go through the bass. And then he also brought some interesting basses. We have to get to that eight string. You know that.
Because for sessions you have to, you don't have to, but it's nice to have a variety of sounds.
Okay, so this is, let me find it, Words. Here's Words. This is Missing Person. This is the original recording. So him going into the show, I mean, into the band, this is what they showed him. This is the sound of Missing Persons. So this is what he had to deal with. Okay, so you get an idea what's going on in the song, and that's pretty straightforward. So now let's talk about your how you dealt with that.
Well, let's see. The intro is pretty much...
Do you do any, do you?
Well, that's all me. This part?
So you're doing octaves.
Well, to give in motion, because otherwise it's this. So I'm going. Then that's the verse.
Right.
See, I'm doing this.
Hand me that mic for a minute.
Yeah, I'm hand me the mic. So I'm doing, watch.
Pull it out.
There we go.
It's getting a little boomy in here. I'm going to take the low cut.
I can lower some cut, too.
Can you lower the...
Yeah. So I'm overwhelming you, ain't I? I got it.
I mean, he's a bass player.
Yeah, you know how it
he
is.
He gets
give
low.
Us, give us an inch, we'll take a yard. Okay. But even in the verse, are we good yet, or are we still fiddling? Okay. Is that better for you, Jeff?
Yeah, a little... What's happening is the room is resonating. I just want to make sure they hear what you're playing.
How's that? And there's a verse. So well, even that slide, it adds a bit of tension and a bit of lift, mm-hmm. rather than just carrying that. Now, when we get to the chorus, which is... I'm going...
That's very cool.
So I'm walking it a bit, you know. So,
and it's interesting because one of the things that of the style that you play, and a lot of it's an influence, I think, from the 60s. Is they a lot of times they'll arpeggiate a chord, they'll play the chord. Now he's not doing that fully like on some other songs, but he's kind of doing
I'll hit a third or I'll hit a fifth. Or
yeah, there you go. That's the, he's articulating the chord.
Like I like going to the seventh and the sixth too. Even that little slide pickup, you know, gives movement sometimes. Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. It's moving, but you're harmonically giving, you're harmonically supporting it. You can hear the chords because you're playing
the
chords.
Yeah, I'm trying to outline it.
Right.
Then just doing all, I'll do
whereas on the recording, it's just that doon, doon,
doon, doon. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I do a lot of palm muting.
Well, let's talk about your picking style because now he's got a thumb pick on there, and some of the session stuff, especially some of the '60s stuff, a lot of people would use a pick to
but
get that.
Not necessarily a thumb pick.
No, not a thumb pick, but a pick.
I've seen some. I think who was it? The Moody Blues, but he's going. You know, he's very light. I figured out if I play back between the pickups. And because if I'm here, listen, hey brother,
yeah,
see how much you're punching. Also, I like to palm mute because otherwise, if you're not, it's this. And if I use the pick flat like this, what? Listen, now if I angle it, which I do, it adds an over, see what I mean? This is flat.
Yeah, but. Now, I didn't know. I thought John Lodge used a flat pick.
Well, maybe it's just a video. Maybe he was.
Oh, okay,
it.
Because I know he's used a pick before.
Well, some guitarists, I think more in the 60s, they weren't a lot of real bassists because they were playing stand-up, a lot of them. So I think a lot of early bassists were guitarists. Rick Nelson's guy who played bass was a... I mean, Osborne, I think, played guitar first.
I saw a lot in sessions. I saw them using picks just to get the bass to cut more, to articulate more.
Well, there's the... Now you get into the theory of some people look down on people that use picks. And then there's people who use fingers, you know, or they, whatever. And then, you know, they have this discussion. Well, when I saw John Entwistle when I was 15, I didn't care about anything except I want to play with a pick and my fingers. You know, and other bass players showed me that, but he didn't, he would use a pick. But when I started to use a pick, it was always the A, if I drop it, how do
That's
I change?
That's interesting, because when I saw him, when they did Who's Next, he used fingers.
Well, when I
but
saw
it was bright. I mean, he had that tone.
Well, I saw him play P basses before, but all this stuff in Tommy, he's doing all that kind of stuff. It's all picking, but he switched.
Right.
And I didn't like having it. When I joined the Knack, since a lot of the music is fast eighth notes, I realized that if I'm using this and I have more power because I'm using more of wrists than I'm just like this. Instead of that action, I can use my whole arm.
But I saw these guys were actually play mostly with fingers, but on the sessions they would use the pick. But was that pick? The pick was important for my Sharona, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have more attack when I hit the notes.
Go ahead and play the riff. It's Mia's favorite song. So go ahead.
So I've heard people play it like this. With fingers. I've heard people pick. And when I go.
So he's kind of almost like, even though he's using the thumb pick, he's almost like slapping the bass down.
I have more, you know, it doesn't sound maybe right.
No, but the way you're playing it, the way you're attacking the guitar, it's a total different sound.
There's a different tone.
It's hitting you.
I'm not even popping it as much, though.
Go ahead and move the mic closer to you.
I hear a different tone going on, especially with the compression with Preston's Ampeg amp there. You can really
hear it. He's digging into that. But part of it's he's digging into that string.
No, I don't necessarily have the slaps unless I want them, but it's...
But you're kind of like going like this on with the...
But when I'm palm mute, anyway, it helps take away some of the snap, and, you know, that just sounded great. And on the Guild bass, unfortunately, I don't have it. My daughter's recording. My kids
That's the classic bass that he used on it. He brought it last time.
But
this is a cool bass. This is a...
The Federa... it was gift of a lifetime. They made it for me. I had another bass I was using for a while. But this has such a broad range of sound. I can use humbucker, single coil, and...
What kind of pickups are those?
Seymour Duncans.
They're Seymour Duncans.
But even from... Now, if I switch to the full sound... See how full it is?
Yeah.
Single.
Yeah, you get more overtones.
So I can dial in whichever sound I want. It depends on what I'm playing, what session. This is pretty versatile for me.
Yeah, is that what you use with Missing Persons?
Yeah, I like using this live. And a couple of songs I'll use the Dingwall, which I'll get to later. And depending what it is, you know. I mean, I have a precision bass, which is probably the best bass I have, but it really doesn't fit that particular style. I've used it for punk stuff. I've used it. A lot of fun.
But that's
stuff.
One of your go-to session basses.
Yeah, because it
fits in the pocket.
Yeah, because some of the tracks we've done, that Knack stuff you play later, I'm using a P bass on it.
Now,
so it's got a different sound. You know?
Before I play the other Missing Persons song,
sure.
Everybody's told me about your wah-wah solo.
Yeah.
So what kind of wah-wah are you using? You're using a Crybaby, right?
Yeah, I usually use it.
Can you give
bass,
us a little sample of that solo?
Well, I don't know. I gotta jump back. You know what the thing is? There's a parameter here where you can adjust the, there's a sweep, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I know it's variable. This is set up to sweep.
I'm sorry. Damn it. Excuse me. I probably said the wrong thing. Darn it. There's a way we... I can do more of a tremolo, but mainly it's just... And I like using it on a couple of songs, especially, you know, and solo is kind of cool when I'm doing...
It brings out a little you can articulate a little bit with it.
Yeah, it depends.
But it sounds almost like a phase shifter in one way.
It actually does.
Yeah.
And this is I have an old Demeter tremolo.
Oh, you can hear it. Just play a sustain note. There you go. Now, that's not something you hear every day, tremolo on a bass. Actually, let's go through what you're using on there. You have a Pog. I see a Pog.
My first, this pedal is a bassist. It's a Keeley limiter. I have different compressors because this without it. Hold on. One has to be more accurate. Without it, some notes stick out more than others when I use it. It's more even.
Yeah, it evens it out.
Especially on the low notes. Without it. It's got more of it just makes it. It takes away what the sound man would be doing if he knew what music we're playing.
Right.
Sometimes when you go into a club, you don't know who's going to mix. So this way on stage, I can limit some of the notes, the low notes that might peak and disturb the singer.
Now, what's the blue one?
We know. So this is when I want to maybe get. That's more I get a low. It's like it's a Pog. So
you're using it to get like a low.
It's an octave up. Sorry, the levels are so messed up here, but I'm sorry. I don't have my man Friday with me to do the work.
So you use it just to give you a little bit of harmonic emphasis on the octave up.
I wanted something to give me a 12. I have an 8-string bass, but. When it's not with me, see?
Because most of the people I know that use the Pog try to get like a Moog bass sound. Gets that kind of gritty sound.
It gives, without it, you hear the difference.
Yeah, it brings up the upper harmonics.
It really adds a nice thing to it. And this is just a boost. When I want to do those things, it's nice because I can. It's got a treble, middle, and
so it's a pretty basic. It's a pretty, no pun intended.
Yes,
it's a pretty simple setup.
But your new friend will help me build an expanded.
Yes, she will.
Board.
She knows her stuff.
Because I like using some echo a little bit. You know, a couple of I do. In the right song, I could.
I see a flanger in your future.
Yeah, and also a fuzz too. I like overloading it, and I've got a pretty good fuzz too. But that's just generally to get some color, you know. I mean,
yeah.
But I think the limiter really helps tame the sound on stage. You know, it's hard to tell in here.
Well, before we move on to more session stuff, we might as well take a tour of the guitars.
You want to do a visual tour?
A visual and audio tour of these different basses, because he's got some really interesting basses.
Let's go to the more colorful. One.
More colorful one. Well, you know, I wouldn't. You can just take that bass and put it right in my car.
Yes.
Not a problem.
Well, again, I'm very much in debt. I had a Koa Federa bass I bought on the road many years ago, and I got involved with a company there. It's the best thing, you know, to be made for me. It was incredible, so I'm grateful. Now, this is a Kubicki bass. Philip Kubicki was a genius. For a lot of reasons, but he made this bass, I guess in the 80s, actually. This job on this, I originally had a different color one. Unfortunately, it was borrowed, never given back. I had a beautiful blue one. So this was a plain white one I picked up. I met this artist, and he would have these giant, you know, canvases, paintings, where he would melt crayons and create these incredible designs. So, oh yeah, I'm showing them to the camera, aren't I?
You look so, at, hold on, wait a minute, let me grab it. I'm not that fast.
Oh, it's okay, and this is the front. Now, this was just an experiment. I mean, if I didn't like it, I would no doubt take it off. But I really, it kind of gives it that psychedelic quality to it. The only problem is, maybe you listeners out there might help me to know what I could put on this so I don't peel off the paint, the crayons when my nails hit it. So that's the question.
You couldn't have a clear lacquer put on it?
I don't know. I don't know if that would affect when it, some people say it would affect it when it got hot. I was thinking of a plexiglass. I don't know. But
so anyway, that's not coated. That's paint right now on it.
That's just crayon.
It's crayon.
Now this Kubicki is very interesting. These are, I can go past, I guess people will want to, it's one of the first bases which made that kind of tuning system.
The pegs are on the bottom like
yeah,
the Steinberger.
Yeah, even though Steinberger did it, but this has a ratchet to it, which keeps the strings tight.
Let me zoom in there.
And the neck is, I'm sorry. Hold you guys on. Are zooming, I better talk fast.
Okay.
Okay. And this is the back, which is an amazing laminated neck, if you see all the pieces into it.
Yeah.
But what's astonishing about this bass that no other bass can do, and if you notice this weird, so this plays regular, I can roll off. It's got five different positions. I roll off. What's amazing about this bass is this is like a capo. So when I flip it, I go to a D. What's even more amazing is when you drop, even with a hip shot, drops it, you got to reposition your fingers. This, you don't. There's my E flat. There's my E. There's my E.
Oh, there's like a little mini fret for the E flat. That's very cool.
There's my F. There's G. There's my E flat. And there's my D. So the real advantage is you don't have to transpose your finger patterns because of this.
Now, are those
pretty deep?
Are those Kubicki pickups?
Yes. He made these pickups. I can go passive, or I can have a big bump. This has a huge bump, so I can do the like a reggae because it's. It's really low. That's a bass.
That's a deep bass
too.
And it's not as long of a scale, I don't think, as the other one, and it's still pretty deep.
No, but it goes, if you really think about it, it's got an odd phrasing to it, but it goes up to all the way up to a G.
Wow.
So it's a pretty amazing bass, and I like playing it, and again, it's nothing like it. And it's got a great sound, but again, this, you just flick it. So I can go through a song and play an E.
Have you ever used this with Missing Persons?
No, I use it with the Knack.
With the neck.
On it later on, and I recorded with it, but I will use this with Missing Persons when I can figure out how not to melt the crayon.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can figure that out. I know it's not rocket science, but anyway, so this is a unique bass, and again, it's got a great sound to it that's different than that bass or different than the other
okay.
bass. So again, and I think they started a website. Philip did pass away a few years ago. And somebody who was very close to him started the website.
Do they still make that model?
No.
Okay, so that's totally unique.
This is in 86. They started making it probably in 82, 83.
Right. So that's a one of a kind.
But I love it and the crayon stuff. But it's a great bass to play live, too. And I will, once again. So we want to go to something else?
Yeah.
Now, again, when you do session work, if I'm playing a lot in D, for instance, I may choose this bass because, again, my positions remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to mess around with, even though it's pretty easy after a while. So
that's pretty cool. You just flip that thing and you're there.
And also, because of the length of the string, it doesn't flap. And a lot of basses, when you have a D, even with a one of the hip shots, sometimes it flaps a bit. So this is fantastic if you like a tight.
You don't need to worry about those popping out up there.
No. What do you mean? No, it's that easy.
No, because I can see the end of the...
No, the tension down here is pretty extreme. I've never been hit in the head like a rubber band. Don't worry.
Those are bulletproof sunglasses. Just
show
that.
No, I'm gonna reveal myself in a minute. but when you're playing live, when you're recording, again, that's a great bass to give you a couple of different sounds that I wouldn't get on my P bass, I wouldn't get on something else. You want to give me the other crooked one?
Yeah,
this is
an interesting bass.
Interesting phenomena. I actually used that. You see that album you have? The album. We did an album called Zoom with the Knack. Mm-hmm. Terry Bozzio was drumming with us, ironically, or maybe not. God, I wish I was playing with us now.
There's the picture, and he's using that bass. That's that bass.
This is almost a prototype. This guy, Sheldon, his last name's Dingwall, which is an odd name for a rock bass. He's a genius, because this guy, Novak, I think his name was, made this fan fret system.
Yeah, well, the fan, I've seen fan frets on some acoustic guitars and some electric guitars, and it's supposed to make it easier to finger the guitar, especially
when
you get
it. Well, it's not that. The reason they did it was because, if you notice, the like a piano, the lower strings are longer. This, because this bridge is mathematically figured out, look how long the E string is,
mm-hmm.
and on corresponding strings. And look, even the pickups are crooked, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
One of the best stories I have, and I told Sheldon this story, I was playing at some bar somewhere in the valley and many years ago, and a guy comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, man, what the hell happened to your bass?" I go, "What are you talking about?" He says, "It's all crooked." I go, "I left it in the sun too long, man." And it melted, and he believed me. That's a great story. It's a true story. But anyway, this is E-flat, by the way. See how low that is? For you purists out there, that's with my fingers.
Yeah.
And it's got a heck of a lot of bottom. And it's got a unique sound to it. And this is E-flat, and I've played...
Now, what's that? That's a flame maple top, but what's the body made out of?
I think it's quilted maple.
No, but what's the back?
I don't know. Oak?
There's a quilted back, maple mac, and then it looks like walnut.
Yeah, I think it is. It is. I think it's an early
walnut.
It's an early prototype.
And then what's the fretboard?
I'm not sure.
Because it doesn't look like rosewood. But it's interesting, when I've played those fan frets on a guitar, just don't look at your fingers, and you can easily play it pretty easily.
It's got a... But anyway, it's got a great sustain. And
so what do you use this one more for?
I use this for Missing Persons. When I did that while solo, we do a song called Simon, which is an E-flat, so... I use this bass, and it sounds fantastic.
So it's set up for that, for E-flat.
Yeah,
because,
I mean, that's a pretty solid E-flat, if you really think about it. It's very huge. You heard it. Mm-hmm. So I think this is, and I love using it because the wood is so resonant. So I use it in regular tuning as well.
Yeah, all these.
And everybody says it looks so hard to play. But if you close your eyes and you play it, your fingers...
Yeah, just don't look at it.
You naturally, I try to look at the audience generally. but no, it just fits your hand better. And,
right.
And this has really been a wonderful bass to have, just for the attention it gets. People go, "What are you playing?" You know. So anyway, that's the Dingwall.
Okay.
And
now we
there
got
you
two
go.
Other really cool
you
ones.
You want to segue to a track and then come back to the...
Well, what do you want me to play? Do you want me to play one of the tracks from...
Round Trip?
Yeah, let's play one of those.
Now, Round Trip was our third album, and Jack Douglas was our producer, and God. And we were the first group he worked with. He worked with John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that whole album, just starting over, and that whole thing was an amazing album. Anyway, with John dying, he went into kind of disappeared for a while, and we had broken up. The Knack broke up in December and got back together when John, was assassinated, whatever you want to say. It's hard to even say it. But it gave us the ability to get back together, to look beyond the fact that we have each other. Why the heck are we breaking up?
Mm-hmm.
So we thought of producers. We thought of Jimmy Iovine, who was incredibly busy. And now, as we know, he's a god of Interscope. But Jack Douglas, we came up with the name Jack. And he actually agreed to do it. And he liked our music. So we came to L.A. and we commenced on the album. And I think it's the most... The best sound we ever got on the bottom end, but more than that.
But this album, more than the other ones, you were using different basses, right?
Well, yeah, I used three different basses on the first album. I used a Guild, Rickenbacker, and Hofner. But in this album, I used four basses, but it wasn't that. It's the sound he got. So the P bass is predominant on the first piece, Radiating Love, and then
were you using amps or were you direct?
I was using probably an Ampeg, both. He would actually do three. He would do mic, direct, and then he'd do an angle thing or something so we combine the sounds. But it's the best sound in the kick drum. So that, to me, the album, mm-hmm. stylistically, we showed that we always had the ability to play anything. We could play bebop, we can play funk, we can do jazz. This album enabled us to do a bit of everything.
Okay, and, which one do you want me to play?
What do you got up?
Radiating Love, Sweet Dreams, or Africa?
Let's do a little bit of Radiating Love. This is my P bass. You can hear the slides on it and the swoops. And then we could do Africa because nobody ever would imagine this would be the knack, okay?
Okay, here you go.
You hear the swoops I'm doing? That's the P bass.
Yeah, and it's the bass, the mix. I have to, it's in your face. I mean, you can hear that bass like right here.
And that kick drum is
That's
phenomenal.
Now,
let's do some Africa.
I'm going to play Africa, and then which bass do you want to?
I'll grab the eight if you want to.
The eight. Okay, so he's going to get the eight while we play. So.
And the thing with Africa is it's a song Burton wrote. I wrote all my own bass lines. It was influenced by no doubt James Jamerson and also Chuck Rainey, because it's got a jazz and Verdeen White on the pops, who I love.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, Africa. Here. Now, it sounds like you're overdubbing. There's some other bass parts. There's two, like...
Well, when I'm doing the down, ba da da da.
But there's like...
Yeah. I had to do the pops because I'm doing the line.
Right, so that's double. That's actually an overdub, which is kind of cool because I was like, there's no way you can do that all at once.
When I play that, well, no. But when I play that for people not saying who it is, I mean, Doug's kind of doing like a Morrison kind of tone poem thing. You know, just not, it's singing, but not. But that track, that drumming, I mean, it sounds like Billy Cobham. I'm playing, me, Burton's a brilliant guitar player, and we didn't try to play it.
I would never in a million years guess that was the Knack.
No, and you'd think.
But there's some really cool lines that you're doing in there.
Yeah, well, you know, the line is great, but I'm doing a lot of the da 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 da, you know, H-ring. Then go away. Wait. Yeah. I'm playing on the 8th string, by the way.
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay, but then we'll get to Sweet Dreams, only because it's a different vibe. It's up to you, because of the time.
We're almost, we're getting close. And I still want to play the Harrison clip.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll get to that then. So anyway, this is an Ibanez 8th string, which is probably 40 pounds. This was given to me when the Knack was touring in 1980. It was the first time they ventured into the artist series of basses, and I didn't quite know what to do with it. I had a Hackstrom 8 string when I was when I started playing, and that was okay for what it was. But this one, you can tell any line you do and you double. You know, I could, if I upstroke, I get the low string. And then if I add, then it, so if I pick only upstrokes, I get the lower note. See?
So it's set up like a Rickenbacker where the higher string is on top.
So this way I can get. I like the chord and stuff. So I like the 12 string effect.
Yeah, it articulates the overtone, so you get a bright.
And I figured out a way to. It's kind of hard on a 12 string, an 8 string rather, but it works. And I use this in sessions too, especially when you do want to double a guitar line, which
you've never tried this on Missing Persons.
I don't know. Maybe when we do a new album, I can do that. But it depends, you know, what it fits. I like doing these like.
But even that line, like on Words, even that line on Words, all that, it sounds cool on there.
Yeah, I can probably throw
it. I mean, it'll kill his back because it's so heavy.
But I like the fact that it doesn't have the punch of a regular bass, but like in three pieces I've used this. It just fills up a lot of the, and the harmonics are just brilliant.
Sounds great.
You know, that's
a brass bridge, right? Too?
Yeah.
That's brass.
And it's neck through body.
Yeah, exactly.
So that it reminds me like a Firebird or something.
Yeah.
I think that's
exactly
like the sustain.
But
like
look at that. Besides the bridge, look at the tailpiece. That's a big chunk of brass. It's like a railroad.
It is. I think Ibanez really was trying to make this
they
something
really
special. And, you know, some of the quote. It's really got a nice thing to it. And I think, again, it adds a lot to a track you want to double, maybe. You know what I mean? And, you know, if you do them. It would be great. Anyway.
Let's look at the Hofner real quick, and then we got to get into the George Harrison.
How long we got?
We got about 5 minutes.
Now let's get into the Harrison thing. We got to do that. That's the high point of where we're at here.
All right, set it up.
Set it up. Well, I'll set it up with the phone call. I got a call from somebody who was asking me if I could do a session that day, and I'm going, with who? He goes, I can't tell you, you know. And I says, well, can you tell me more? And I knew the guy who was telling who the producer wanted to bring me down and play. And his name is Bob Rose, and he was producing a session, Sound City. So I figured I'd go down there. It's funny because I was going to be getting married in a couple of months, so it was kind of a nice distraction for a moment. Anyway, I went down to the studio, and there it was, Jim Keltner, Lawrence Juber, and George Harrison. Now, I would have ordinarily been in freeze mode, probably, but I had met your... I lived in England from 73 to 75, and I was dating somebody who was working for George's press agent, Derek Taylor. And we had met, and we actually went dancing before I played bass with him. I said in the post, we go to a club in London called Tramps. It was a really cool club, and everybody would be dancing. I met a lot of interesting people there. I met Mick Taylor. I actually played chess with Mick. But anyway, not the point. But I met George. So when I was there, it was like, hey, remember I met you in London? I was dating. Yeah. So that broke the ice for me originally. Because otherwise, you know, you don't know what to expect. And I knew Lawrence a little bit. And Jim Keltner knew Bruce Gary, who was the Knacks drummer. This is in 86, by the way. And I even brought a photo of the payment that I got to show you that I really did it. But
oh, I believe
you. But anyway, there was a big chart. It was called Someplace Else. It was used for the soundtrack. I was supposed to go to England, possibly do the album, but George ended up meeting Jeff Lynne, fired the producer we had, and bye-bye. But... And I was going to put off my marriage, which luckily I didn't, because I would never be able to get it back. But I thought I would because I was going to England. Anyway, I cut in the control room with George playing. He was very friendly. He was cool because I knew him. I didn't ask for his picture.
Which bass did you use?
I used, it was actually an Olympic.
Olympic?
Believe it or not, I don't know how or why. I brought the Olympic. It sounded really good. And we did, and I had a chart with all these weird diminished chords in it, which George, and it's the first time George had sung in quite a while. He had taken time off, clean shaven, and I played in the control room with him, and he was, you know, very light, and I was, like, trying to think, what am I going to play? And that's the thing about session play. I'm sorry we didn't talk about it. It's trying not to get in the way, to be creative at the same time, not to mess up.
How much did he tell you to do, or did he just pretty much let you do it?
Not a lot. I came up with a line, which actually they doubled on cellos later on in the track on YouTube. But it just flowed, you know. Maybe I'd get a call back. I don't know if it wasn't right, but it seemed to work right. So in the middle of panic and, you know, semi-paralysis, I did pretty good.
So what do you do to keep your cool? I know that, you know, a lot of people freeze when the record button hits. And
well, here's the thing.
There is a little thing you have to...
I know we're low on time. That's why I'm talking quickly. It's not the caffeine, but it's quick. No, when I first started recording in the old days, the problem was when you're in the studio... And you're on studio time, and they've taken 3 hours to get the drums down, you know, and everybody's ready to go. It's so much pressure because if you don't want to, nobody, you know, you're not going to punch in. I mean, you can, but nobody wants to take the time. It's not like today where you can just have 9 takes on something. And you had the extra pressure of not screwing up the session. The drummer's going to yell at you and the producer. So that was more pressure, trying to come up with the right part and not worry if I was going to get thrown out of the studio mm-hmm. or they were going to go, great, come back tomorrow. As time passes, especially with the drum machine, people could do more of multiple feels on it. But when you're doing live, and also going back, when we first came to L.A., I'm from New York, we got a record deal, and I'm in the studio with Gary Kellgren, who worked with Jimi Hendrix, Tom Wilson, who was a great producer, and, you know, I was nervous. And when they play things back and they only play the bass by itself, not with the drums, that was like I felt naked. Actually, first time, yeah. Because even that's what they do. I was playing okay, but it was weird not hearing with the drums. So that was the beginning of getting used to doing sessions and maybe succeeding, doing other sessions where maybe 5 bass players would be called in. They didn't want any of them, or they'd circle back to me, or nobody really knows what they want until they hear it. So all I can do is try to play the chords, play the lines I'm doubling, make up some harmonies, counterpoints, and hopefully it'll make the song better, because that's really what I'm trying to do. Not play too much, not play too little, but be creative.
Just what they need. Now, I'm going to take us out with the Harrison clip because we're out of time.
Okay,
but I
good,
wanted
good,
to,
good.
Before we do that, I wanted you to just mention where people can hear you play. Where's Missing Persons playing? Where you, what's your next gig?
Okay, we just finished two gigs in a row at the Canyon Club in Santa Clarita. We played St. Rock and Hermosa Beach. We've actually been on a real tear. We've played Canyon Clubs. We've played a couple of 80s festivals. We're not going to play again probably till July, and I'm not sure which 80s reunion we're going to do.
Are you doing anything else, anything at this time?
Yeah, it's, I'm working on a lot of film cues with different people, and I'm also going to pursue other projects as well now that I have the time.
So you have, you're getting a little hiatus from the...
Well, in a way, I don't want to be caught in one style of music or one sound. I mean, I can't do a lot of what I want to do in the context of that music. So I need to go off on my own. Also, the reason I don't have my other basses, my guilds and my P bass, my daughter is playing it on... My kids are in a band called Gateway Drugs, Gabe, Liv, and Noah... And they're doing their second album. And
so mention
they wouldn't
real quick,
give me my bass back.
Give them everybody the YouTube. What's the name of the song for the YouTube? The Sharona, right?
Well, real quick, we did a benefit concert the other night. Well, not a benefit, memorial for Pat Torpey. He was a brilliant drummer who played with Mr. Big and Robert Plant. Yeah. But he played with the Knack at different points the last 3 years. And was a good friend of Doug, who was dealing with some real illness issues. And Pat had passed away from Parkinson's in February. And he was really loved and by the community. So it was the Canyon Club the other night. There was a memorial concert. Mr. Big played, Billy Sheehan, a lot of the other people. But they asked me if I wanted to do something. I said, sure, I'll do Sharona, but I don't want to play with those guys. I want to play with my kids. Because we've done it before on many occasions. And Matt Starr sung it. He's a great drummer, and he was with Mr. Big. And we killed it, so check it out. Memorial concert on YouTube. Yeah. It's probably an hour into the show.
And we definitely have to have you and your kids on, because they play.
But they were so cool, I wasn't worried about a train wreck. I mean, I've played it with great musicians, but they always forget what they never do the solo right. So here's my daughter winging it and she learned it, and we really did it. So
yeah,
I'm really
proud. Your kids
proud.
Are great musicians, too. A lot of people don't realize that. But,
good genes. It's the luck of the gene lottery.
Good genes, yes. The gene
the marriage didn't work, but the genes did.
So everybody, also, too, if you go to the Knack website, you can get more information on Prescott, pictures of some of these bases and stuff. And I just want to thank you again. We'll end with this Harrison clip, which is a really beautiful song.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody. I'm sorry we...
Oh, no, no. It just means you have to come back.
Well, I will do that.
You know, we'll just each time he brings different basses. And,
but I want to play them for
Kathy, we got to get him his pedal board.
Please, Kathy.
I mean, this is a good pedal board. I'm not complaining. But I know you can give him. He needs to flange a little bit.
We will get you fixed up.
Thank you, honey.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody.
Doug, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
And also Audrey, Mia, thank you for showing up. And Dave sitting in the other room. This is, everybody have a great weekend, or a great week now. It's the beginning of the week. But this is something else.
Someplace
else. Okay. I got it. Here it is. Everybody have a great week. We will see you next week.
Took me a while to say, wish you belong to me. Now I'm saddened as I've never been, regretting. So for a while, could you comfort me, hold me for some time? I need you now to be beside me, while all my world is so untidy. Loneliness, empty faces, wish I could live more in some